Nandana Prasadana Ranjana Yamuna Tiravana Chari Yamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Shyama Sundaradha Shyama Sundaradhe Jaya Radha Shyama Sundaradha Shyama Sundaradhe Jaya Radha Shyama Sundaradha Shyama Sundaradhe Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Jaya Gurudev 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 Jaya Jaya Gurudev Jaya Om Vishnu Pada Paramahamsa Parashacharya Sthavacharya Sathya Shri Shri Isi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Shukaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhaktivinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Dham Ganga Maya Ki Jai Jamuna Maya Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radhe Shyama Sundara Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premananda All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guru. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya At the conclusion of the discussion between Maharaj Nimi, the king of Mithila, and the Nava Yogendras, of whom Karabhaja Muni was the last to speak, answering with his final words the last question posed to him by King Nimi regarding the different avatars who appear in the different yugas to establish the Yuga Dharma. And Karabhajna Muni explained, beginning from the Satya Yuga, and then progressively through to the Kali Yuga, specifically answering the question, what are the various forms of the Lord, their names, their qualities, their features, and their mission? And then he began explaining all those details about the different yuga avatars, culminating in Krishna vanam tasa krishnam sangha bhanga saparsanam yagyai sankirtana prayar yajanti hi samedasaha. Meaning that in the Kali Yuga, those who are possessed of very subtle, refined intellect, capable of deciphering the very essence of a subject, they worship the Lord who is Krishna Varnam, always chanting Krishna, and yet Tvasa Krishnam. He's not Krishna, he's not dark, because of the upsurge in emotions, which are of a golden luster, radiant with prema. And those who simply bow down with reverence and appreciation at his lotus feet receive all protection in this most perilous age of Kali. And by that suitable vessel comprised of his lotus feet, meaning devotional service, they are easily able, by his grace, to cross over this insurmountable ocean of birth and death. And in spite of the deep degradation that permeates this age, the sages of previous yugas and distant universes and those souls who are highly enlightened, they worship this Kali Yuga, not every Kali Yuga, this Kali Yuga, the 28th in the reign of Avishvatamanu. Because all perfection is attainable by the simple and sublime process of chanting Hare Krishna. And thus the difficulties in this age actually facilitate our objective, because it induces in a sober mind a sense of utter helplessness, which is most appropriate to call out upon the holy name of the Lord in the spirit that Srila Prabhupada personified and authorized and encouraged us to follow, like a child calling out for mother, Mother Hara, who is Radha, but in the vocative, Hare, meaning a penitent plea from a repentant heart, and urgent. This is critical, because this precious opportunity could so easily be missed just by a little inattentiveness or lack of appreciation or deficiency in the spirit of gratitude, which makes us worthy recipients for that for which we could never qualify, but simply submit. Because in Chaitanya Lila, there is a corresponding mellow, reminiscent of the subdued charms of chastened lovers who have been separated by an agent called Akura. And we can imbibe some of his spirit of separation, which is appropriate, because Krishna is not to be found in this world. When our ignorance dissipates to the slightest extent, we realize that the first indications of love come in the form of realization of our separation from the object of love. And Krishna appears to his devotee usually once in their lifetime to help us in the awareness of the utter deficiency of the material body or the empiric mind to understand, appreciate, serve, and love him. And that awareness should foster our hankering and longing that in pursuing that spirit of separation to its depths, we will find there the treasure of union with Krishna once again. So it is there, in the depth of the heart of every soul, and especially so in the case of mankind, that dissatisfaction born of material desire is the root cause of our suffering. We become unhappy in the course of trying to find happiness. And therefore, Prahlad Maharaj recommends that you just renounce your desire to find happiness for yourself in this world, because it's a gift, it's a consequence of bhakti. And it is for the sake of making the devotees happy that Lord Krishna has to descend personally into this world. The function of pleasing his devotees cannot be delegated to any avatar other than himself. So, this conclusion in the discussion between Karabhajna Muni and King Nimi gives us a glimpse into the hidden secret of all the scriptures, which is disclosed here in the Srimad Bhagavatam in a discreet way because of the reasons we discussed yesterday. In Navadvip Dham, in Godrumdvip, where in Krishna's Lila, Surabhi pleased Krishna by her appeal that he forgive Indra for his grievous offense. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has revealed the sites and the significance of the holy places, beginning with his rediscovery of the Yogapith, the house of Jagannath Mishra. And from there, by following the discourse between Lord Nityananda and Jiva Goswami, which tells, you know, how far from that central point of the yoga pit in different directions are the residences of the different devotees and the places of the different avatars and the different tirthas who all reside eternally in Navadvip Dham. And by hearing from those great souls who have that darshan, that inner revelation, by developing a service attitude with no objective other than to please the servants of the servant, we are awarded a glimpse into that reality by their grace. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his samadhi, enlightened state, and it's interesting how and when this transpired. It was after compiling Navadvip Dham Mahatmya. And then he wrote Bhavataranga, which is kind of like a summary study, but it's much more personal than that. Because as he's summarizing what he had already penned in Mahatmya, he actually begins entering in to the dynamics of the Dham and interacting and discussing with the different devotees and avatars from Tamil, who all originally in the shelter of all tirthas, devotees, and avatars, Navadvip. So he sees it, according to his own unique bhav, is that in Godrum Dvip, Nimai goes out with his friends to herd the cows. And one of his friends tells him, "Hey Nimai, you're actually a gopa, and this form of a brahmana doesn't suit you well. So come, I'll carry you on my shoulders as we go together to herd the cows. Because though you are worshipped by the brahmanas, you are in truth the lord of the gopas. And now that it's getting late, I'll let you go home. And I'll keep some butter for you, and we'll meet again in the morning. But if you're late, I'll be very upset with you." Why did I bring that up? Because the ever-changing moods of Lord Gauranga roamed through the full spectrum of devotional ecstasies, but evolved more and more into the feelings of separation the Brijabasis felt when Uddhava returned with Krishna's message, which was, you know, one generic message for all of them, but specific letters for each and every one of them. And that mood, which we discussed yesterday, generically called divine madness, includes such symptoms as chitrajalpa, which is a kind of incoherent, bewildered speech induced by seeing the good friend of the beloved, and is filled with varieties of covered anger, and culminates in an intensive form of eagerness. And that was manifest when imagining the bumblebee to be a messenger from Krishna, although some of the acharyas say it actually was Krishna. And she confronted that bumblebee, which intimidated him, because he could only expose himself to so much pain before he had to fly away, but then was drawn back by the fragrance of her love, the sound of her voice, and the charm of her soliloquy. And after basically chastising the bumblebee. And she turned back to Uddhava. Her talks revealed the force of the storm which was raging within her heart. And then she fell back into trance. But the essence of Krishna's message, what do the message say? Separation from me is not possible at any time, any place, any circumstance, because I'm the all-pervading super soul of all creation. Well, the Brijabasis didn't really need to hear that. But they were intrigued because they had that perception to decipher that concealed within Krishna's outer message was concealed a deeper meaning, which implied that due to their special love, he was always present as their most special lover. Now, Uddhava was not even aware of the hidden message within the letter that he delivered to the Brijabasis. But seeing their response, he became increasingly aware that every moment he spent in Braj was an unfolding revelation in the art and culture of loving personal relationships. And within that realization, he came to understand that the distress the Brijabasis were tormented with was the most selfless expression of love, because their concern was that Krishna was being served by an inferior form of devotion characteristic of Mathura. And they were unable to conceive or believe that he would truly be happy in that circumstance. And thus, all their endless talks through of so many flavors and moods inevitably came back to the one question: will he return to us? So Lord Chaitanya, tasting these various mellows, dancing in these their corresponding moods, speaking sometimes in the voice of Srimati Radharani, other times in the mood of Krishna, sometimes chanting japa consisting of the names of the cows or the gopis, which was quite perplexing, even to his own students, who found him one day chanting japa of the names of the gopis. Because as the Brijabasis were feeling so much separation from him, he was feeling a corresponding separation from them. So when the Lord's student found him chanting japa of gopis' names, you know, they had just recently come to accept that the holy name of Krishna is the only meaning of every vowel, consonant, syllable, word, verse, and scripture. They had just come to begin to accept that reality. Not so much that the Lord explained it to him, because it didn't make any sense, but because of their service attitude, he awarded them a glimpse into his own vision. But now, that has all shifted, and that particular student, he was not one of the Lord's own students, he was another student from the empirical school, and therefore he could not appreciate the sentiments in this lila, and he chastised the Lord. What kind of japa is this? What merit is there in chanting the names of the... Stop this chanting and just chant the name of Krishna. And then... Now, bear in mind that Bengali pundits are little people. Just like we have all our little people on this side of the room. Because Bengalis are designed for kirtan. So they have, and especially the pundits, they have frail bodies and they're not very courageous. Whenever Bengalis are drafted into warfare, they're either clerks or, usually clerks. They just can't deal with any kind of... But then when he said that, he challenged the Lord, who was sitting down, and the little pundit was standing up, and he challenged him, stop this chanting and chant the name of Krishna. And immediately, the Lord, who at that time was 7 feet tall, he rose up like the sun. And he, in a furious rage, he blasted that little pundit. Why should I worship Krishna? Krishna's a debauchee, a coward, an ingrate. He steals away other men's wives to dance in the dead of night. And he's such a coward that even in his other Leela, when he pretended to be a Kshatriya, when Vali challenged him, he hid behind a tree and shot him in the back. And he was so uncultured that when that simple, submissive Mataji Suparnik approached him for shelter, he cut off her nose. And when his own devotee, Bali Maharaj, surrendered his life and soul, he threw him down into hell. So then rising up in a furious mood and taking a stick to attack the little pundit, that little Bengali ran for his life. And he returned to the shelter of the other pundits, just completely out of breath and trembling and completely terrorized. And he said, what happened? He said, I discovered something today. This Nimai Pandit is not really a Vaishnav. He's not really chanting Krishna's holy names. He is chanting the gopis' names. And I tried to correct him, just in a humble mood. And he lost control of his mind. And he attacked me. Now, people praise him as Mahaprabhu, but we're masters too. We're brahmanas, no less than him. How dare he insult our caste in this way? So, if he ever does such a thing again, there will be severe consequences. So the Lord was not, the Bengali escaped from the Lord, so the Lord wasn't aware of the exchange between the different students. But he knew. And he was very sad. He turned to Lord Nityananda and said, it appears that my descent to deliver the world has instead degraded it. The only medicine which can serve as the antidote for the evils and perils of this age has instead aggravated the malady. And Lord Nityananda knew what the Lord was alluding to. And he became so deeply troubled at heart. But he couldn't challenge the Lord. Said, my Lord, you only know what can deliver this world. But Lord Nityananda didn't say what he was really feeling. How will Mother Sachi survive when he takes sannyas? So, the story going to Keshava Bharati. Receiving that sannyas mantra And the meaning of the sannyas mantra is, I take shelter in the surrendered and sacrificial mood of the gopis, which awards the fearlessness to cross over this ocean of temptation and ignorance. It's my paraphrase, but that's the basic meaning. So, not only is Lord Chaitanya's mood and mission and identity unique and supreme, even amongst the avatars, even the secular teaching of the great arrogant young professor in his days of triumphs of learning was unparalleled, and no one could really understand, as we discussed yesterday, even his questions, what to speak of his answers and his refutation of the answers and his establishing the answer to the original question on firmer ground afterwards. But everyone shared a kind of universal admiration for him. To the atheists, he was death personified. To the pundits, he was greater than Brihaspati. To the women, he was like Kandarpa. And the only camp who did not share this universal appreciation was the Vaishnavas, who were utterly disappointed that in this most brilliant intellect the world has ever seen or heard, there is no trace of any inclination for the service of Krishna. His puzzles and riddles and controversies were endless and secular. And even for the favorite child of Saraswati, Keshava Kashmiri himself, there was no holding his ground in open controversy with Nimaya Pandit. And therefore, as we discussed yesterday, all the pundits would just flee on seeing him, including the Vaishnavas. So seeing Mukunda just bolt upon seeing him, Nimaya asked his friends, why does he run every time he sees me? He must have some important business to tend to. No, it's not that. These Vaishnavas don't want to associate with me because I have no inclination for the service of Krishna. But then he called out, Mukunda, even though you're hiding, I know you can hear me. Just wait. I need to enjoy the pleasures of learning for a few more days. And then I'll discard it all as utterly useless. This is my paraphrase again, but it's true to the spirit of the text. And then I will surrender to one good Vaishnava of my choosing. And that humble servant of Madhavendra Puri will confer upon me the treasure of loving devotion, so exalted that Brahma, Shiva, Shuka, Narada will all be bowing down on my doorstep, begging to receive alms in the form of that most exquisite love of God. So that transpired after his initiation, and just a few more words on his style of teaching. Because on another day, he actually captured Mukunda. Mukunda saw him and he bolted, but Nimaya grabbed him by the hand and said, Mukunda, you will not escape me today. And he held him so tight, and Mukunda was trying to escape. And then Mukunda started thinking about, you know, self-esteem and all those things. I will defeat him. I will not be intimidated. He said, Mukunda, I'll only let you go if you can answer my question. Ask me anything you like. And he said, that you like poetry. I like poetry. Can you recite to me some fine verses of poetry? So Mukunda was really applying himself, because he knew that whatever you said, Lord Chaitanya would impeach every simile and tear apart every metaphor and evaluate every rhetorical figure to such an infinite degree that everything would be simply torn to shreds. So he thought of the most empowered, perfect verses of poetry from the vast expanse of literatures in this world, and he recited them so eloquently. And Nimai was listening. He said, those verses are just full of faults. And then Mukunda realized, there is no one in this world who can hold their ground against him. And then he let him go. Go back and study harder. And come meet me again in the morning. And don't be late. And Mukunda was like, if he would just become a devotee, I would never leave his side. But these endless riddles and puzzles and controversies are so disturbing to the hearts of the Vaishnavas. So then as he continued his peripatetic wanderings through the streets of Navadvipa, he saw Gadadhar trying to run. He grabbed him by both hands. Gadadhar, I will not release you until you answer my question. So Gadadhar followed in the footsteps of Mukunda. Right, ask anything you want. Because Gadadhar was exalted pundit himself. And Mahaprabhu asked, oh, I better ask you something from your own field of expertise. So explain, so your field is Nyaya. Tell me something about it. Ask anything you like. What is the definition of mukti? And then Gadadhar recited word for word the scriptural definition of mukti, which means the cessation or destruction of all extreme miseries due to awakening to the enlightened state. And I said, that's not the explanation of mukti, because he wanted to eventually reveal that real liberation begins with devotional service. He didn't say it at that time, but he alluded to it as he tore his definition to shreds, and Gadadhar left thinking, if only he would become a Vaishnava, I would never leave his side. But these controversies and riddles and puzzles are just so disturbing. Because what does it have to do with devotional service? But then a wonderful thing happened. Ishwara Puri came to Navadvipa Dham. And every time he saw Nimai, he would just be enchanted by a stirring within his heart. And Ishwara Puri, at that time, was just finishing his book, Krishna Lilamrita. And he would read that. He would recite from that book every night, and Gadadhar Pandit would just listen and relish the love in Ishwara Puri's heart manifesting in his words. So Ishwara Puri asked Nimai, you are the greatest of pundits. Would you edit my book or just proofread it? And Nimai said, no, I can't do that. Because your words are the expression of the most pure love of the soul for Krishna. And Krishna, he accepts the language of the heart. He's not concerned with grammatical errors. And even if they were to be present and I were to point them out, that would constitute a grave offense at the feet of the Lord. So I'm sorry, I cannot proofread your book. It is perfect in its expression of love for Krishna. But Then as Nimai heard Ishvara Puri reciting his eloquent poetry, he pointed out, that verse is wrong. You should change it. And he recited how it should flow, the rules of rhetoric. And the next day when they met, Ishvara Puri told Nimai, actually, Nimai, I looked up the codes of grammar and found the authorization for my use of that verb. And you, Nimai Pandit, were wrong in what you said. Now, in those days, nobody could say anything like that to Nimai Pandit. When Ishvara Puri said it, Nimai just, without saying a word, he humbly and happily accepted defeat. In the words of his guru to be. So then the inevitable question arises, what was the significance of that chapter called Triumphs of Learning, when he was just defeating and tearing to shreds everyone and everything, except the Vaishnavas. He would just avoid them. He wouldn't deal with theistic matters. He had a marked aversion to them at this point. But what is the significance of all this? Because Navadvip Dham was especially blessed to become the emporium of all learning and culture in the universe, with one exception, the school of Nyaya, which was the exclusive forte of the Mitthalese pundits, who were very careful not to allow their textbooks into the hands of any Bengalis, because they knew that they would lose their monopoly if their books got back to Navadvip. Nevertheless, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he was living in Nadia, went to Mitthala, studied the Nyaya, learned everything by heart, and came back and opened his own university called the Navya Nyaya, the new logic, which so far eclipsed the Mitthala school, earning Navadvip Dham the title as emporium of all branches of learning and culture. But none of the pundits taught anything about bhakti. Even Devananda Pandit, whose exclusive text was the Bhagavatam, did not ever touch upon the topic of bhakti. And these Bengali pundits had such an elevated type of intellect that any other mind would simply become dizzy at the heights of their wisdom before even approaching it. And Nimai knew that these pundits would only submit to a greater juggler than themselves, which he proved to be. And after defeating them all, his conclusion was that the holy name is the life and soul of all transcendental knowledge. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss and awards us a taste of that nectar for which we are always anxious. So, and then in his own school, teaching that everything simply meant the holy name of Krishna, but simply informing an audience that every letter, syllable, vowel, consonant, everything means only the name of Krishna in the process of devotional service, simply informing an audience of that reality does not necessarily impart the truth to their hearts. His students were enabled to realize the truth because they submitted to him in such humility that they were blessed with the darshan that he himself possessed as servant of the servant. And this applies to us, that our realization will only be proportionate to our degree of surrender to the servant of the servant, who can award the realization which they themselves have attained. During this time, there appeared with abrupt suddenness a series of unrecognized direct manifestations. When the Lord just spontaneously would flip into a different mood, and in a very bold voice he would proclaim that I am he, the Lord of all the worlds, descended here in Nadia, and therefore I am named Vishwambar, the support and sustainer of all the endless universes. And he would just run after people and grab them. And it appeared that he was haunted or possessed. Some thought it was a ghost, some thought it was a witch, some thought it was just complete madness due to vata disorder. And the different doctors told Mother Sati, this is a very aggravated case. You have to bind him hand and foot and massage him with, amongst different things, this oil from the she-jackal. Yeah, there was different kinds of healers in Navadvipa. Not all very. And Mother Sati just could not deal with this. But she managed to, you know, get a large tub made filled with Vishnu Narayan oils. It's supposed to be pacifying Devata. And he just floated in that oil, laughing loudly and continuing to proclaim, I am he who sports in the water of the Karna ocean. Now, this is good. But then it would just come and go suddenly without any warning or reasoning. And Mother Sati was just so disturbed. My Lord, you've taken away my husband. You've taken away my elder son. All I have in my life is Nimai. Please don't take him. And then one day Srivas came by and he's watching this. And all his hairs, you know, frazzled on end, trembling, perspiration, shedding incessant tears. In the presence of Srivas Pandit, because the Lord was always respectful, although sometimes playful with the Vaishnavas, especially for Srivas. And in a way, he was very, oh, Srivas, did you see my wind disorder? What do you think of it? He said, it's a very favorable wind. I hope everyone in the universe is affected by it. At least me, I hope to become influenced in the same way. And he might say, oh, thank God. If you said what other people were saying, I'd just drown myself in the Ganges here and now. And he turned to Mother Sati and said, cast aside all your sorrows, most virtuous lady. This is not some vata disturbance. This is the highest, the finest sentiments of pure love known only by the Brijabasis toward their beloved Lord Krishna. A form of devotion for which Brahma, Shuka, Narada, Shiva pray and yearn, but rarely can ever attain. Your son is manifesting that form of bhakti, and I pray that everyone be influenced by it. She said, thank you, Srivas. So, then, but the Lord was waiting because, you know, Advaitacharya at that time was back in Shantipur because he had certain leelas that he wanted to facilitate because he brought the Lord down, although he didn't realize that that was the Lord for all this time. He was beginning to realize it. So then he wanted to orchestrate the Lord expressing in his own words that he was the Lord, which he did by Advaita's tricks. So this time Advaita's in Shantipur, and Lord Nityananda was waiting for the Lord's call in Braj. And then when the Lord called him within his heart, he came. And with the arrival of Nitai, then Mahaprabhu said, Ramai Pandit to bring Advaita, who came. And then when they were all together, that signified the appropriate time to inaugurate the Sankirtan movement. Because Lord Chaitanya abstained from conferring devotion until Advaitacharya, who is an essential link between the material and spiritual world, as well as the sanction of all spiritual endeavor, came. And then the Sankirtan movement really began. But all the while, Lord Nityananda was behaving like a little infant in the house of Srivas. And we hear it, you know, throughout the Chaitanya Bhagavat especially, that there are those, and Kaviraj Goswami gives his brother as a prime example, who have great faith in Lord Chaitanya, but they literally run at the very name of Lord Nityananda. And, you know, we don't have a lot of reference as to why that is so. We just generically know that he's Avadhut. Which also has theistic significance because, you know, Lord Chaitanya was so strict in every way. But, you know, Avadhut is a characteristic of the Shaivite cult, but there are also a few in the Vaishnav lines because they have a significant function in their total disregard for impediments born of caste, consciousness, bodily designations, changes which occur in time, and all such relative considerations. So why was it that Nitai, who was way beyond the point of midlife crisis or whatever that age is, still would not clothe himself or feed himself unless Malini did it for him? And she's in her 70s. But taking Nitai, a grown man, on her lap, and the milk would flow from her breast? And this is very bewildering to the conditioned mind. But Nityananda, true to his name, would not allow superficial designations of caste, creed, gender, or the passage of time, or the changing of the body, to impede the fact that he is Malini's eternal child. He preserved and facilitated it, that sentiment. And just to verify and testify the sanctity, Lord Chaitanya, he challenged Srivas. You know, what are you doing allowing this Avadhut in your house? You don't know where he came from. You don't know his family, his caste, his creed, his guru. You don't know anything about his past, and you're allowing him in your house. You yourself might lose your own caste. And, you know, he said different things at different times, but it was kind of evolved around the point that even if I found him in a liquor shop or associating with a low-class matati, it wouldn't change my attitude towards him. Because whatever he does is just to confer ecstatic love of God. And then Mahaprabhu just becomes so wild with joy. Srivas, what are you saying? You have that much faith in my Nitai? Then I say, and it's true, that if the universe ever became so destitute that Lakshmi Devi herself had to go door to door begging for alms for her sustenance, there would never be any scarcity in your house. And even the dogs and cats in your house will be infused with love of God just by the presence of my Nitai and your faith in him. He said that in Navadvipa. He said it again elsewhere when he went into seclusion after Mahaprabhu's Sannyasa Lila. So, But the amazing thing is that even with the arrival of Lord Nityananda and Advaita, and they were having the kirtans all night, every night in Srivasangam, but Lord Chaitanya was not experiencing the fullness of joy in the holy name. But he kept that suppressed and wouldn't reveal it until the day when he could not repress the reality anymore. And just as the kirtan was coming to a close, he cried out with the most passionate emotion, "Pundarik, my father, when will you come?" And the devotees looked at each other. Does he mean Krishna? Pundarik means, and then Mahaprabhu cried out, "Vidyaniri." And they realized he's calling some devotee. But he was in deep internal ecstasy at the time. They could not confer with him. And then when he came back to external consciousness, "Who were you calling?" And Mahaprabhu became very pleased by this question. The world is sanctified just by hearing his name, which is Pundarik Vidyaniri. And you're fortunate that you want to know about him, because no one can recognize him. He'll come soon if you all combine your heartfelt attraction to draw him here. And then he begins crying again like a child, "Father, when will you come?" But Mukunda and Vasudev Dutt, they knew, because they're from the same town, Mekala, East Bengal. They knew Pundarik. But nobody else could know, because he would only go to the Ganges late at night, because he couldn't bear to see how people disrespected the goddess, stepping in her waters with their feet, bathing, washing their hair, brushing their teeth. He couldn't. So he'd just gather some Ganges water at night and take it home and sip it and use it for his achman and worship. So then one day, Mukunda, who was so close to Gadadhar Pandit, and these two boys since childhood, their only play was going to, their childhood play, not play in a frivolous sense, meaning enjoyment, was going to different sadhus to hear from them. And one day Mukunda came to Gadadhar Pandit, and he was just beaming with delight. He said, "Gadadhar, you love to visit sadhus, but today you're going to meet a sadhu like none you have ever met before." And then Gadadhar was enlivened, and they ran off chanting Krishna, Krishna, and came to the house of Pundarik Vidyaniri, who was still in hiding. And they bowed down, and when they looked up, and Gadadhar Pandit saw, and he was thinking, he didn't say anything, but he was thinking, "What kind of sadhu is this? Sitting on this elevated brass bedstead, covered with all different colors of silk sheets, with soft silk cushions he was leaning against, covered with three different canopies of different fine silks, his forehead bedecked with the most fancy and scented sandalwood tilak, his lips red from chewing betel, as his servants fanned him with peacock fans. And he would look in the mirror and see his beautifully arranged hair, scented with the most fine perfumes, and smile at his reflection in the mirror." And Gadadhar Pandit was thinking, "What is Mukunda doing to me?" He didn't say anything, but these boys were very close, and Mukunda could read his heart. And he sang that verse from the Bhagavatam, how could anyone not worship Krishna, who is so merciful, that that wicked Rakshasi Putana, who ate all the boy babies and abducted all the female babies to take to Kamsa, when she approached Krishna to kill him, he accepted her offer as a child would his mother and elevated her to a position as the assistant to Mother Yashoda in Goloka. And as soon as he heard that verse, which is a very appropriate verse, which I hope I remember to mention, he just went into ecstasy. And he began thrashing so violently as he's condemning himself. Oh, Krishna, most merciful master, you've descended to deliver all the world. All the living entities will receive your mercy in this descent, except for this one soul whose heart is drier than wood and harder than steel, although you call me Vidyaniti. And he was thrashing and rolling and violent, like convulsions almost. And his 10 servants were trying to hold him down, and they were flying in the air, and the bed was destroyed, and the pitchers were spilled, and everything was flying and torn to shreds for 6 hours until he finally drowned in the ocean of love and became silent and still. During which time, Gadadhar Pandit turned to Mukunda and said, you just protected me from a deadly offense because you read my heart before I said anything. I doubted him, but you have revealed his glories. But still I committed offense in my heart. And I think the only way it can be forgiven by Krishna is if I accept him as the spiritual master who I have not yet surrendered to. And Mukunda said, very good. When Pundarik Vidyaniti came out of his trance and he saw Gadadhar sitting so humbly before him and noticed, he said to Mukunda, who he knew, that this child is effulgent with an exceptional kind of prem. He said, yes, his name is Gadadhar and he wants to surrender to you. So then, and then that night, late at night, Pundarik came to Mahaprabhu's house. He came in the room and he just fell down, crying and lamenting, my Lord, you have descended to deliver all living entities except my heart is so dry like wood and hard like steel. And Mahaprabhu picked him up and embraced him so tight for 3 hours he would not release him from his embrace. And then he said that Providence has now smiled favorably upon me because my father is again present before my eyes. And then he glorified him to all the devotees. His name is Pundarik Vidyaniti, and he's been dispatched by the Lord to distribute prem. And he renamed him Premaniti. And every year for Radhastami, Mahaprabhu would go to the house of Pundarik Vidyaniti, who is King Vrishabhanu from Krishna Leela. The reason I brought that up is because Advaitacharya and Lord Nityananda are essential links in connecting us with Mahaprabhu's mercy. They're essential links in a combination of reverential and confidential affection. The confidential link is too intimate to be described in words, and therefore he is hardly mentioned. But his glory is proclaimed by the fact that Gadadhar Pandit, who is Srimati Radharani herself, became the disciple, which is like the child. In the parental relationship appropriate in guru-disciple relationship, the glories of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, which remains silent as far as words could ever express, is proclaimed in the fact that Gadadhar Pandit became his disciple. We're over time, so we'll continue tomorrow. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. That's good. Thank you very much. Oh.